It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Those of us with cell phones and smartphones have all experienced it, that sudden pang of anxiety when you pat your pocket or look in your purse or check the place around the house you normally set your cell phone down to discover it's not there. Where is it? In this first half hour, we'll hear about new research into anxiety and stress caused by not having your smartphone and how researchers want to add nomophobia, short for no mobile phone phobia, to the official list of mental disorders. We want to do that in our first half hour. Our guests are Chalar Yildirim. He is a PhD student in the Human Computer and Interaction program at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Chalar, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. In our Iowa City studio, someone returning after we've spoken with him before about technical aspects of our lives, Juan Pablo Urquhart. He is a University of Iowa Associate Professor of Computer Science. He studies human-computer interaction at the University of Iowa. Juan Pablo, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's start with you, Chalar, because this is a study that's come out. You are a lead author of a study published in the journal Computers in Human Behavior. Tell us about the study.
Well, this study was for my master's thesis, actually. And the publication came out of that study. And for this study, we looked at nomophobia, but specifically, we started with qualitative interviews with college students to identify the dimensions of nomophobia. And based on these dimensions, we came up with a self-reported questionnaire that had 20 items to help people measure their level of anxiety, as you said, when they are separated from their smartphones.
Mm-hmm. Share some of those questions that you had in your study. Some of the, I mean, there are a lot of, not all of them, but a few of them. So we get an idea.
One of the, maybe like the most salient ones, we would say, I guess, you know, asking them if they would feel anxious when they ran out of battery or credit on their smartphones. And the other was related to how they would feel when they were basically running out of battery.
Mm. Okay. We've actually put that on our social media, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page,
nice.
And people are tweeting us at IPR Talk. How do you feel when you forget your smartphone is our question. Please weigh in on that on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Some of the early answers to that question. Jamie tweeting, feels weird because don't wear a watch. Having a phone becomes like a watch when you don't wear it. Kyle tweeting, it depends. I rely on it all the time, but mostly frantic if I don't know where it is. Just forgetting it is no big deal, according to Kyle. So what is a phobia is, I guess, the question. We throw around phobia. Here there is a clinical definition of phobia, and there's a phobia definition or a term that we all do use. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's correct, actually. You know, under the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which has been recently updated, actually, so DSM-5 defines nomophobia, phobia way different than what we tend to use, you know, in our daily lives.
Mm.
And they have some specific criteria, and it's mostly 7 to 8 criteria for each different kind of phobia listed under phobia section of that manual. And it's basically characterized by an irrational fear, an intense fear, and it has to be somewhat consistent, you know. It's just, if it is just once, that's okay. That's not likely to be called a phobia, but if it's something that's recurrent and that keeps coming up and coming up all the time, then that's when they are talking about phobias, actually.
Mm-hmm. And when you looked at the answers to the questions, some of the questions that you put out in this study, did you find answers that you thought displayed excessive or irrational fear in the phobia category, clinically speaking?
Well, it's kind of hard to speak clinically at this point based on the self-reported data that we have. However, that's what we are proposing, actually. Like, we are proposing that nomophobia could be classified under the situation of phobia, recognized under specific phobias in the manual. So I'm just, I guess, throwing away some terms, but so there are some different categories of phobias in the manual. And what we are proposing is that nomophobia can be recognized as a situation of phobia that's evoked by the unavailability of a smartphone or a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. And what is the reaction you're getting to this idea?
Well, the research into nomophobia is still in its infancy, so we do not have many studies that are investigating nomophobia as a theoretical construct. However, that being said, I think with all these media attention, people are starting to think about nomophobia, and they are, I guess, beginning to conduct research into this. And we are also continuing, or we would like to continue, doing research into nomophobia. We don't know that yet, actually. We haven't received any reactions or any responses to our proposal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Çağlar Yıldırım, is a PhD student at Iowa State University in Human and Computer and Interaction, lead author of a study published in the journal Computers and Human Behavior. If you've just joined us, nomophobia, that would be standing for no mobile phone phobia. If you have something that you could say yes, perhaps you have an experience that puts your anxiety level and not finding your mobile phone on par with what you think is a phobia. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Ryan tweeting, I bought a smartwatch to buzz me if I get outside of Bluetooth connectivity from my phone. So there's someone very concerned about being not in touch with the smartphone. Juan Pablo Urquhart, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa. You study human-computer interaction. What's your reaction to this study, this idea of nomophobia?
Well, I think people do depend quite a bit on their smartphones these days, and this has been a very sudden change. It's happened very quickly over a very short amount of time. But if you think about it, now we have 6 out of 7 billion people in the world have access to mobile phones. About half of the world's population has access to the internet. So it's something that's becoming very ubiquitous. We expect it to be available, and we depend on it to do very important things, to communicate, know where we are, where we need to go, what's next. And by bringing all those things together, it makes itself indispensable. So when you don't have it, all of a sudden, it's a big handicap. So there was an article in the New York Times this past week about refugees in Europe saying they need food, shelter, and a smartphone. Those were the three essentials, because they use their smartphone for communication, for knowing where to go to get their connections and communicating.
Mm-hmm. So what about the idea of this being a phobia, though? Not having it, an irrational or excessive fear? Can we go that far?
I guess it is possible that for some people it might be, if it's a constant concern, I'm not sure that I've necessarily seen that, but it is something where I could see it causing a tremendous amount of stress if you actually lose it.
But by what you're saying, that our society has become very dependent on smartphones, is that whether you're a refugee or whether you're an Iowan going to work every day, it's rational to have a fear or a high level of concern to lose or misplace your smartphone or not have access or have your battery run out.
I think we can equate it to not being able to use your car, for example, right? It's another technology that we've come to depend on. And all of a sudden, if your car's in the shop, you can't go to work. It causes a lot of stress.
Okay. You brought in a reading that I was interested in before we started our conversation on the air, Juan Pablo, about a much older technology that is commented on the book. Would you talk about that a moment and share it?
So I was reading a children's version of Don Quixote to my son. So this was written over 400 years ago. And he was talking about how in the introduction of Don Quixote, we learn how he's very much interested and dependent on reading his books. So I'm going to start reading. He was seldom seen without a book in his hand. When the weather was fine, he would sit in his little library or under the apple trees in his garden and read all day. He often forgot to come to his meals. He was so wrapped up in his books that he forgot his horse, his dog, and even his niece. He forgot his friends. He forgot himself. Sometimes he sat up and read all night. Now, if we substitute smartphone for book, it sounds a little bit like perhaps some of the things we see with smartphones.
Try to take a book away from him or say he can't read books anymore, he would be very distressed.
Yes.
Well, what do you think of that, Çağlar?
Actually, like, I kind of agree with Pablo in that, you know, it doesn't have to be problematic all the time. You know, just because we are depending on our smartphones doesn't necessarily mean that we are all nomophobics or we are all nomophobes. Those are like two terms that are also used to refer to people with nomophobia. The problem arises when it starts interfering with one's, you know, daily routine and one's mental well-being and psychological health. If you feel that you are preoccupied with your smartphone and the, you know, the thought of using it, or if you fear that all the time that you might lose it or you need to check it all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's when we start to think about, okay, is this becoming problematic or is this interfering with your life? So that's when it becomes a problem. Like, it's the normal dependence is not something bad, actually. I like my smartphone a lot because it allows me to check my email on the go and all of that. But we need to maybe distinguish between what is, you know, dependence and what is over-dependence or unhealthy dependence. So the unhealthy dependence part is something that I am interested in or that we are interested in.
Mm-hmm. Juan Pablo, would you agree with that? There's a dependence and then there's an unhealthy dependence that could develop?
Yeah, I think we need to still have time to let the smartphone help us when we need to its help, but at the same time not have to always be dependent on it for every little thing and feel that we have to be near it and using it all the time.
I wonder if either of you had the experience that I've had, that you may be, you know, not working, not doing anything, but in your leisure time, and you find yourself still repeatedly picking up your smartphone. Mm-hmm. To this, and then people, of course, do that. But then asking yourself, you know, why am I doing this? And it seems that it becomes a habit. And unless you kind of reflect on that, do I need to be doing this? Is it healthy to be doing this much? Do you have thoughts on that, Juan Pablo?
I think it has to do a lot with the high level of personalization that we have in these devices now. So instead of having the same experience for every user, with today's smartphones, they're very much customized to your specific needs and your specific interests. So it's a constant battle between all the apps that you have to say, hey, I got something really interesting that you need to look at right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on that, Chalar?
I actually like to add to that, you know, that idea of constantly checking your smartphone makes a lot of sense. And it's true for many people that we have, you know, collected data from. And like maybe some of the other stuff that we can talk about is like ways we can kind of deal with it. So like many people like to check it as well because there are some reward mechanisms that are activated in your brain when you are checking your notifications and all of that. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Join our conversation as we talk about possible overdependence on our cell phones, our smartphones, 1-866-780-9100. Do you, for instance, make a point to set down your phone and say, I'm not going to go near that for the afternoon and enjoy perhaps a nice afternoon of Iowa weather? 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. You know, there is this contradiction we have with our technology, Juan Pablo. Perhaps you can address this. So you can take your cell phone off into a room and for hours, theoretically for days, be connected with the world. But then at the same time, you are not with any other human beings in real life, are you?
Yes, and this is something that a few years ago, a book by Sherry Turkle called Alone Together brought this up. And it's the challenge that it's a challenge and also an opportunity. So on the one hand, we have these devices that are very attractive and call our attention, and they seem to, in many cases, isolate us from those who are physically nearby. So if you're waiting at the doctor's office in the hall or something or taking a bus, maybe a few years ago you might have tried to start a conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. Now it's more likely than not that you'll see people with their smartphones pretty much saying, don't bother me
right.
in doing that.
And it doesn't even just have to be, if I can break in here, a bus stop where that's a fairly anonymous experience, mm-hmm. where it's okay not to talk to people. You can actually go to a family gathering.
Yes.
And have people on chairs, couches. And I hear you're laughing there, Chalar. That's true, isn't it? You sit there in a supposed family gathering, and many of the people in the family gathering may be staring down at their screens connected with people who are not in the room?
Yeah, it's the latest bit of news that you're really interested in competing against your sibling who is sometimes annoying to you.
Right.
So
and,
that's the
right.
It's
and
a
how
difficult.
How many parents, I've been included in this, have to tell a teenager sitting across having a meal with you, can you not look at your cell phone while we're having dinner? Can you put that off? Can we turn that darn thing off? Right. What about the idea of control here? That we the issue of feeling in control, I guess, is part of this.
Yeah. So there's issues of control, especially of all your information in that is gathered through the phone. So we have with this device, they know where you've been, where you're going. They now can start keeping track of some of your health data, for example, mm-hmm. with some of the newer kits. And all that information could perhaps be useful for you to find out, for example, reflect on how you're doing, reflect on your physical activity, get a better sense of how perhaps you can make better use of your time. At the same time, right now, we don't really have, as consumers, a lot of control over all that information. And that can be – I think that brings a lot of challenges in terms of privacy. Mm-hmm. And we don't really have any – we have very few legal protections at this point.
Right. And it seems to me, HLR, as someone who is studying nomophobia, no mobile phone phobia, this might be another dimension that you are just feeling perhaps stress or anxiety because of the way a cell phone may open up your private information to others?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, actually. That was a great summary of the affordances smartphones provide.
Mm-hmm.
And we also came up with four dimensions. One was about communication, the other was connectivity, the third one was information access, and the last one was convenience. So, you know, Juan Pablo's summary pretty much covers all of this. And as he said, since people have their private data in their smartphones, nobody wants to reveal their, sensitive information. You know, it's just your maybe social security numbers, credit mm-hmm. card information, and all of that. So there's part of it as well, trying to keep your smartphone safe, and then when it is out of nowhere, and when you cannot see it, then that might also induce some anxiety just because it has your personal data in it.
Okay. If you're interested in the questions that Chalar mm-hmm. Yildirim has come up with, along with his academic cohort there, about questioning whether you might have no mobile phone phobia, nomophobia, we're going to put a post on after the show on our Facebook page that will have some of the questions, perhaps all of the questions that they came up with to test what degree of nomophobia you might have. And Chalar, I assume you took your own test here?
Yes, I did.
And are you low or high on your nomophobia scale?
I think I tend to be low, actually, but there are sometimes I might go a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of very temporal as well. That's what we are suggesting. You know, there can be some times where you are not that nomophobic, if you will, and then there are some times that you have really high levels of nomophobia that we refer to as severe nomophobia. So it's kind of a trade-off between okay. the peace of mind you have, as some of my participants put forward in our interviews, and also the affordances and the level of anxiety caused by the over-dependence or unhealthy dependence on your smartphone.
Let's try to squeeze in a caller before we have to go to break. Jason is with us from Cedar Falls. Hi, Jason.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Are you possibly over-dependent on your smartphone? How do you feel about it?
I'm completely the opposite. I hate my smartphone. I grabbed it for work purposes, but I'm at this point in time wishing I would have grabbed it just a GPS instead. I find that all these apps and updates take away the time that I used to spend critically thinking longer about subjects as opposed to just reading the news sites
right.
and updates. And I miss that. I miss that time that I used to spend just thinking. So now I make it a point when I get home. Oh, pardon me. I'm a little out of breath.
Yeah.
I make it a point when I get home to turn my smartphone off for at least 2 to 3 hours before I even think about picking it up.
That sounds healthy. I think there's quite a bit of academic literature, isn't there, that what Jason is talking about, that mm-hmm. this new age, this digital age, is mm-hmm. has the effect even on people who are used to reading lengthy books and articles and thinking deeply, that it puts you on a skimming the surface of information rather than going deeper. Juan Pablo, do you know about that?
Yeah, there's some amount of research on how it affects our attention, and that has a lot to do. Do we pay attention to one thing for a long time, and are we able to do that, or are we getting constantly interrupted? So it's smart not even just to turn off the smartphone, but really even if you're doing something on a computer, which sometimes we still depend on, to turn off anything that can interrupt you
right.
while you're trying to do something that requires a lot of focus.
Jason, thanks for sharing your personal experience, and we hope you continue to have a healthy relationship with your smartphone. That includes being smart by turning it off, I guess. Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Chalar, what's in the future for you? What do you want to study after this? What do you want to look into?
The research is still, you know, as I said, in its infancy, so we are trying to see what other factors may play a role in one's proclivity to nomophobia and like what may determine their level of nomophobia. We are specifically wanting to look at certain psychological traits that might help us predict one's nomophobia level, actually. Like we are trying to see, like, are there some gender differences, some individual differences as they relate to personality. So mm-hmm. we are going in that direction.
Juan Pablo Urcat, what are you looking at now in terms of human-computer interaction? What are you researching?
One of the things we're going to be starting pretty soon is looking at more beneficial ways of using some of this technology with young children. We know young children are using this technology. We don't know if it's for the better or worse.
Right.
We don't know how it's affecting their development.
And there we come back to attention spans, don't
yes.
we? Focus, attention spans.
I think depending on how we design the technology, I think we can use it for actually increasing attention, for paying attention to the right things, for communicating better with people who are in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of how we design it.
I wonder what the future might be of cell phones, how we can predict if we see a time in the future when holding a cell phone in your hand will seem as clunky and old-fashioned as using a rotary dial phone. I suppose that must be coming, Juan Pablo.
One of the things that's been making the rounds a lot in predictions is something called the Internet of Things. So basically, pretty much every little thing around you, all your appliances, everything being connected to the Internet, having a computer embedded in it.
Okay. We'll follow this. Thank you very much. Juan Pablo Urcat, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa, and Chalar Yildirim, a PhD student in Human-Computer and Interaction Program at Iowa State University. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
When we come back, the making of Ferguson, public policies at the root of its troubles. That's when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.